I'm going to raise the ante 2 degrees. We just heard 61 degrees. I have a thermometer right here in the valley that says 63, and we're going to grab every doggone degree we can get here. Boy, that feels good out there today. Good afternoon, everybody. Stan Turner with you here. Thank you very much for joining us here. We have what we truly believe is another fine and fun show for you this time around. You'll get the drift in just a minute. But you heard the forecast. Mom's Day is tomorrow. Do not, repeat, do not forget Mother. Remember her indeed, and, you know, I kind of wish today, Kyle, were Mother's Day because this weather is so beautiful. Tomorrow, the forecast talks about the same kind of day. But, you know, Mom deserves some good weather, right?
After what we've all been through.
We all deserve good weather.
But yeah, this is a beautiful day.
It is a gorgeous one. How's your week, my friend?
It has been eventful.
Eventful,
yes.
Huh? That can be taken one of several ways.
It's been a good event.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to check on that, Kyle. Kyle's our producer and board op here, and we always enjoy being with him every Saturday here, and sometimes we get him during the all-request and dedication program.
Rarely, but
Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we have fun with that one, too, don't we?
Oh, huh? Yeah.
You learn all those songs you never knew existed, right? All right. Well, folks, you heard the temperature, so let's call it 63 degrees, sunny skies, a day that's really looking good. Let's get to the show here. Comedian George Carlin often did a riff on all the objects we accumulate during our lives. You know, stuff. We buy it, use it, then shove it off into the basement or the attic or the crawl space storage unit, wherever we can stuff our stuff. Many of us don't want to pitch our stuff into the dumpster, do we? Because we, you know the excuse, we might need it someday. Well, it's equally true that some of that stuff has emotional and sentimental attachments to us, so we cannot bear to throw it out. That's why we keep it. Toys fit that category. Yes, toys, and not just the ones your kids or grandkids played with. We here are talking about your toys, the ones you played with and were among your best friends when you were growing up. Toys have a bigger attachment to us than we might realize, and all that will come into sharp and fun focus in just a few days when the Minnesota History Center opens a new exhibit. It's called Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Just a few weeks ago, we previewed the exhibit on this program, and we had a big listener response to it. Obviously, our toys were and are important to us. Today on the show, we dig even deeper into the old toy box as we take the wraps off those special playthings that we loved so long ago. Paying an encore visit are Kate Roberts and Adam Scher of the Minnesota Historical Society. Kate is senior exhibit developer and author of the best-selling book Minnesota 150. Adam is senior curator in the History Center's collections department. Welcome back. You said you'd come back, and you're here. And thank you so much, Adam. Good to see you again, sir.
Thank you. My pleasure. It's good to be back.
You were slipping on the ice last time you came here, weren't you?
Yeah, this is a much more pleasant trip to Stillwater.
Thank you. And Kate Roberts, welcome back.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Great to have you back. We had, as I said, such great listener response. This one touches everybody, doesn't it, huh? I think sometimes we forget what's squirreled away down in the attic. You know, I've been to, I like to go into antique shops and little fantique fairs, those sorts of things, flea markets. And I've often, and I mean often, have overheard folks saying, oh, look at that. I had one of those as a kid. Mom threw it out, and I wish I'd still had it. And they'll fork over some, maybe more money than they were expecting to, just to get that object back in their grasp again. So, Kate, Adam, there's really something to it, isn't it? There really is an emotional attachment to these
toys. Absolutely is. And, in fact, when we were, no pun intended, toying around with the idea for...
That was a pun intended.
For the title of the exhibition, one of the potential titles was I Had That. Because there is such a close emotional attachment to these things that... it really is a special and intimate experience that we want to be able to talk about in the exhibit.
Yeah, and you do. Not only talk about it, but show. It really is a show-and-tell exhibit. It opens 2 weeks from today at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul.
Yeah, that's right. 2 weeks from today, we're open 10 to 5 on Saturday. That's the 24th, and it's Memorial Day weekend, so we'll also be open not only Sunday, but Monday.
Oh, Monday. Normally
10
to
5, too. Normally we're closed Mondays.
Okay.
So, yeah, and literally hundreds of toys spanning those three decades, and we want to get you talking and describing and remembering, and that's really one of the main goals of this exhibit, is to get our visitors thinking about their past, through these toys.
Mm-hmm. What do you have in your basement, Kate? Did you hang on to some of your playthings?
You bet. You bet. Right. I sure did. In fact, it's funny because I know we want to talk about Mousetrap at some point.
We will.
And we'll get to that in a minute. I've got that Mousetrap game in
do
my
Do you really?
I still have my Mousetrap. Our Mousetrap. I don't want to offend my siblings here.
Okay.
But the other one is my Spirograph.
Spirograph.
And people will remember Spirograph, I think, and I still have my original. It's actually in my office at work right now.
I can't draw a straight line to save my life, but I could get a Spirograph. We'll talk about the Spirograph thing. You can do unbelievable things with no artistic ability, right? Adam, what do you have squirreled away from your childhood?
Well, I think when we were here the last time, you asked us what our favorite toys were, and mine is G.I. Joe, and so I've still got some of those squirreled away.
All right. Well, people are going to ask, okay, toys of the 50s, 60s, 70s. What about the toys pre-1950 and post-1979? You had to narrow the exhibit, obviously, somehow. But there were toys, right, back in the 20s and 30s. And
there were toys. What's interesting, I think, about this particular period, you know, the idea of manufactured toys is a relatively recent history. It kind of goes hand in hand with the Industrial Revolution and mass marketing and mass consumption at the end of the 19th century. So pretty much a 20th century story. Not that we didn't have toys before then, but they were mostly handmade or homemade.
Right.
Well, then jump forward to after World War II, and you combine that with the fact that now we've got a little more disposable income.
Yep.
We've got lots more kids.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a real emphasis on child rearing, and then you can't forget the importance of TV advertising and pushing all this. So talk about, you know, a perfect storm, if you want. Toys boom just as the baby boom occurs.
Right.
And then they keep going through the 70s. Of course, they might ebb a little bit in the 70s when we deal with an economic downturn.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a really interesting arc to talk about how toys change during those three decades, too.
We'll do about that. And the exhibit does a beautiful job of really giving us a graphic idea of that arc. Kyle, you grew up what? What decade as a kid?
That'd be the 90s.
90s. What sort of things did you play? What were your toys?
Well, that was probably right around the big introduction of, like, the video games and stuff like that. So that was more more my place.
Right. Not the trucks, not the Tonka toys, all that stuff. But
I did
games.
Have quite a bit of, like, the Hot Wheels and Legos.
Yeah. Okay.
I enjoyed those, too.
Right. But you liked the computer stuff, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
What's the old gag now? If your computer goes on the fritz, ask a four-year-old, and they're children of the age, aren't they? I freeze.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, what's kind of fun about the time span that we're talking about, by the end of the 70s, that's the very start of these computer games. You got Odyssey comes out in 1972, and then Atari and Pong, and Kyle's looking at me and thinking, doesn't know what the heck I'm talking about.
You know those.
Okay, so you know Pong. So that's right at the tail end of the 70s. But that's what's fun, I think, about this time span, is that right at the tail end, you're heading into what has blossomed and become huge today.
Yeah, it is indeed. Well, let's talk about the physical layout of the exhibit as we'll see it, and we can start walking through it 2 weeks from today at the Minnesota History Center. That's on Kellogg Boulevard, just below the hill from the majestic Cathedral of St. Paul. It's real easy to find, right off I-94 in Kellogg. Couldn't be easier. So, can we give a little? I guess the layout basically is centered on three big living room settings. Is that right?
Right. So we'll have living room setting for the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s that are all appropriately accoutremented with period surroundings. For those of you who are fans of Harvest Gold and Avocado Green, you'll be in seventh heaven. Or flowers.
That was awful
fake
stuff.
Flowers. So they set the stage, if you will. And then within those settings, there will be smaller settings that categorize the toys. And then adjacent to each of the settings will be what we are calling a play zone. And this is where you actually get to play.
I could take a Slinky and...
Yeah, nothing could be more frustrating, I think, than having a toys exhibit where you can't play with toys. So we created these play zones that have seminal toys from each decade that you can play with. So, as you were saying, in the 50s section in the play zone there, you can actually play with a Slinky. So if you were... internally frustrated by trying to get a Slinky to go down the stairs when you were a kid, you'll get to relive that frustration as an adult. So in addition to the three domestic settings, we're also going to have a garage setting, because a number of these toys were toys that you would find in your garage and play with outside. So there'll be a Stingray bike, Jarts.
Jarts, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, one of the world's deadliest games.
Yes.
What else, Kate?
Frisbees, skateboards. Yeah. Don't forget the big wheel.
The big wheel, yeah.
Right. So,
Kyle, any idea what a big wheel was?
That's the one with the gigantic front wheel.
That's it.
Those things are something else.
And then inside the garage, you want to talk about that, Adam?
So inside the garage, you'll have an opportunity to... toss a Nerf ball around, swing a hula hoop around. There won't be any Jarts, so you're safe there.
No Jarts. We'll explain a little bit later why we don't want any Jarts being airborne and then coming down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there will be ample opportunity for kids of all ages to play.
Well, Kyle, this could be a real education. It's like going to a museum, like a prehistoric museum for you, because not only can you see the things that the toys that were of a big moment long before you came along, but you can actually handle them and try. You know, no computers. Can you get along without those?
Oh, I think I can.
Okay. Sounds like fun, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
And Kate and Adam, of course, this, you just alluded to this, Adam, that this is good for everybody, not just the boomers who played with these things, but their kids and grandkids. And, you know, this is going to be a great education as well as a fun experience.
That's absolutely right. Yes. You know, each of our exhibits, we try to design it so it works for people of all ages, and we particularly love what we call the intergenerational groups that come through. So people coming in with their children, their grandchildren, school groups, we want to get that talking across generations and the memories really going. And boy, I think this will do it.
Well, Adam Scher and Kate Roberts have co-authored a wonderful companion book to go with the exhibit. The book, like the exhibit, is called Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Congratulations to the both of you. This is a splendid volume, beautifully illustrated. The text, the writing is fun. It's informative. It's educational, but it's a blast to read. It's really a little tongue-in-cheek here and there, and it's very well done. So this will be available to you. Is it in the bookstores already?
It's in the bookstores right now. Okay. I believe it's also available via Amazon and all the standard formats.
Right, and we would like to direct our listeners to Valley Bookseller here in Stillwater. They're wonderful sponsors of many of our shows, including this one, and they carry the finest books, and this is among them. So if they don't have it in stock right now, they're going to fly off the shelf. They can get it for you right away.
Correct.
It's easy to get. It's from Minnesota Historical Society Press. So they're right here. They'll have stacks of them. Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Kate Roberts, Adam Scher. That's S-C-H-E-R. Just remember the toys thing, okay? And you'll want this. It's nicely priced, beautifully illustrated, great paper. And we're going to walk through the book, because it walks us essentially through the exhibit, doesn't it? We're going to talk about individual toys, including Jarts. Look out! Heads up! Run for your life! Those sort of things. We'll take a break here, Kyle, and we'll come back and walk through the 50s, 60s, 70s toy lands right after this.
At Jaime's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Jaime's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot leather shave. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush. And at prices that won't melt your wallet. Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
To really experience a book, meet the author. I'm Stan Turner for Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Every month, Valley Bookseller's calendar is loaded with events featuring both local and national authors. Visit valleybookseller.com and click the events calendar for a complete list. Choose from monthly events like the Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour or special presentations with authors on tour. Meet your favorite author at Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater.
We've been family owned since 1922, and we still believe that it all starts with you.
Get new car benefits at a used car price with a GM-certified pre-owned vehicle from Stillwater Motors. You also get a 12-month or 12,000-mile like-new bumper-to-bumper limited warranty on legendary GM brands like Chevy, Buick, and GMC. Choose a late-model GM-certified pre-owned Chevy Cruze starting at just $13,900 and around 35 miles per gallon. Or drive a certified pre-owned Impala, America's favorite full-size sedan starting at only $13,900. Choose from more than 65 certified pre-owned vehicles in stock now. And don't forget to ask about their 2-year, 24,000-mile oil change and tire rotation maintenance program. Stillwater Motors, Highway 36 and Stillwater Boulevard. Right on the corner, right on the price, and online at stillwatermotors.com. Redon's family owned and operated since 1922.
Stillwater Motors, good people to know.
We are back. Thank you very much for being with us. Stan Turner here with the Stan Turner Show, a clever name for the show, isn't it? Thank you so much for your company. We are having an absolute blast this afternoon. Two friends of ours from the Minnesota Historical Society, Kate Roberts and Adam Scher, they have helped coordinate, written a companion book to a new exhibit coming soon to the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul, Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. It affects all of us, whether you realize it or not. Those toys, you know, they're somewhere in your house or your apartment, you know that, or down there in the storage space. So we're jumping up to our ears in the toy box today and having fun. Kate and Adam, what say we go through your companion book? It'll kind of give us a reality check on what we're going to see in the exhibit, which opens 2 weeks from today. That is May 24th, a Saturday, Memorial Day weekend at the History Center in St. Paul, right off I-94 and Kellogg Boulevard. Lots of parking, Kate, Adam? Yep, easy to get to. It'll be good. I'm thinking there'll be a lot of people coming in for this one.
Right? I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
We're going to talk about individual toys. We'll go through the decades with you. First of all, if I were putting the exhibit together, I might have put a showcase with an empty cardboard box in there because, you know what, Adam, you know what I'm talking about, and Kate too, right? Sometimes kids like the box the toy came in better than the toy.
Absolutely. And there is actually a photo. When you come in, I don't want you to miss this. Right. Come around the corner and you'll see a picture of a girl playing inside her box.
Okay. We've heard of outside the box. She's playing
inside the box.
Okay. Let's take it decade by decade here. The exhibit starts with the 1950s, and we have some local bragging rights here with the Game of Cootie, right? A guy named Herb Shopper, I think, was the guy. He had a little shop in Minneapolis. Come on, tell us about this and how Cootie evolved. One of you? Adam, you want to take a run at it?
Well, it's a slang term. Most of you probably might be aware of that actually refers to bedbugs.
Bedbugs, okay.
And this was first coined by soldiers during World War I. And his inspiration, Shopper's inspiration, was really came from his pastime, which was whittling. And he was carving this wooden decoy that looked like a bug, that looked like a bedbug. Mm-hmm. And he thought, you know, this could be an interesting feature for a game, and so he put the idea of the Cootie game together, where you get to, through a series of turns, build the toy, which is a great experience in and of itself, mm-hmm. because it's a very creative activity for kids to be able to do. And so he got in contact with Dayton's department store and sold it to them on consignment, thinking, well, this isn't going to be terribly successful. This is 1950, and it just flew out of the store. It was a surprise to everybody, and became nationally distributed. So it really is one of the first toys that we talk about in this exhibit that gained national prominence that had its start here in Minnesota.
Wow. Herb Shoppers Cootie, build your own bug, Kate, basically. Is that it?
Exactly.
Great appeal. Yeah, Herb himself wasn't even sure, was he, as Adam said?
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah, let's just throw it on the table there. I had fun carving it. Dayton's took it on consignment.
It took off, and then it led to a lot of games, too. So if you're thinking, weren't there a lot of other Shopper toys as well? There certainly were. There were ants in the pants, don't break the ice, all sorts of plastics. Yep. Plastics are huge, and the Shopper toys were largely plastic. Mm-hmm. Lots of toys. He made his name that way.
Yeah. He made a fortune that way, too.
Good for him.
By all accounts, a very modest man. Some words from his wife that are very heartfelt.
Yeah, and
he
said,
Herb didn't understand, I think, at the beginning, what he had.
What he had in the other one. We also have a little quote from his stepson, who said, you know, he was the kindest human being I ever met, and he came into my life when I was a teenager, and he listened to me, and I love that.
That's
speaks so much about
him. Talk about kid-friendly.
Exactly.
This is the ultimate example of it. We can take so many from the 50s. Let's just go down and pick out some of them here. Erector set. Yeah, you budding architects, Adam, huh? What about that?
Yeah, the Erector set actually came out much earlier, 1913, but it really hit its stride in the first half of the 20th century, and by the 1950s, it was exceedingly popular. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that's important to note about this game, well, a couple of things. One is that it was the inspiration for so many youngsters to go into the science and engineering field. We actually have a quote in the book from Dr. Stephen Chu, who was Secretary of Energy. This was one of his inspirations as a kid, was playing with an Erector set.
And he became what, Adam?
He became the U.S. Secretary of Energy and a Nobel Prize winner.
A toy got him launched.
Exactly. Wow. And we also talk about how this toy, and this is not unusual for the period, was specifically marketed to boys for a long time. And it really isn't until about World War II that the marketing changes a little bit to start to introduce it to girls. But even then, they're sort of standing in the background watching the boys make the toys. But we found plenty of personal stories where girls were interested in playing with this. And that's one of the things we wanted to talk about in the exhibit, that although marketers tried to be very gender-specific, they didn't often succeed with that. People played with the toys that they wanted to play with.
Sure. Sure. Erector set, can we describe basically what it is? A series of metal pieces that you...
It's a series of metal pieces that you can assemble just about anything. Most typically, it was building elements. You could make skyscrapers. You could make vehicles. Their largest kit was a vehicle that actually operated, that came with a motor. This came out in the 1950s. That was... quite large, was a couple of feet long. That was the largest kit. So that was actually one of the things that I think was probably the most challenging but the most fulfilling, was you could build just about anything your imagination could come up with.
Amazing. That's here. Talk about educational toy and inspirational toy. Let's talk about Davy Crockett and the coonskin cap, huh?
Absolute fad in the 1950s, of course.
It's an epidemic, I think.
An epidemic, you think about 50s, it.
Right,
you
right.
could not get enough of this. Every kid
had a coonskin or an ersatz.
Or ersatz, and including, you know, just about girls, too. I mean, there were certainly girls' versions, and this is one trend that does sort of go across generations.
And television really launched it.
Television launches that. Fess Parker, if people remember him as being, you know, certainly playing Davy Crockett on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, that just got things going. So by 1955, again, you literally couldn't keep the coonskin cap in the stores, along with all the other gear that came along with him.
The irony is that from all historical accounts, Davy Crockett never wore a coonskin cap.
Don't tell anybody.
Okay.
Don't tell
anybody. It's in your book.
Uh-oh.
But that was
jigs up now.
Huge. huge, massive monster hit.
Well, and it's interesting because the other thing that we often heard, Adam alluded to the fact that we thought about calling the exhibit "I Had That." I almost think a better name would have been "I Wanted That." Because I can't tell you how many people I've heard from who said, "Oh, the coonskin cap, I wanted one of those." And isn't that part of the nature of toys and memory, too? It isn't just the stuff you played with. It's the stuff that you yearned for that was advertised on TV or that you saw your friends playing with.
Got to believe there are a lot of coonskin caps squirreled away, pun intended, you know, somewhere in people's attics, and they're there, or have been given to the children and the grandchildren.
Yes.
Maybe never to be seen again. You never know.
It's
a relic. You'll see them at the exhibit at the Minnesota History Center opening 2 weeks from today. Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. We are walking through Never Never Land here, Toyland, absolutely, with Kate Roberts and Adam Scher of the History Center. And you'll want to make sure you get down there. This is running from May 24th, right into the new year, about January 4th, I think, is the closing day. You've got plenty of time to do it. I would suggest repeat visits with relatives and friends. Once you see it, you're going to want to go back and play with that stuff again, too, huh? How about Hot Wheels? Matchbox and Hot Wheels from the 50s. I thought these were from the 60s. I forgot. This was 50s.
Actually, Matchbox gets its start in the late 1940s.
Okay.
A couple of partners living in Great Britain get the idea for making miniature cars when one of their staff, actually the staff member's daughter, wants to bring something to school. And one of the rules of this particular school was that you couldn't bring anything for show and tell that was any larger that could fit into a matchbox. So he made a miniature steamroller for her, and it just became popular. It just became something that they started to do. So they expanded their line into all different types of vehicles. They did a double-decker bus, which is very traditional in Great Britain, of course. Mm-hmm. And they stayed very focused on what we would now call luxury vehicles. So they're making Jags and Rolls-Royces.
Yeah,
you know, it's very upscale. And they're very finely crafted models.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the late 60s, here comes Mattel with this idea for Hot Wheels.
Okay. Late 60s or late 50s?
Late 60s.
60s, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, 69.
Okay.
And they're very American because they're very focused on the hot rod scene. So the cars are very different, and they're representing the muscle car culture of the 1960s in America. So you're seeing Chevys. And cars that are souped up, and even the wheels are very souped up, are these oversized wheels.
Yep.
So it's a very American response to the very staid and British matchbox.
American overkill.
Exactly. And so they are immensely popular to the point where Matchbox has to catch up and start producing their own vehicles that are more indicative of what kids are wanting.
Okay, interesting. Wow. How about this Alpha 1 ballistic missile from the 1950s? You really got to put a missile in every kid's hand, shouldn't you? What was this about, Kate?
One of the many toys that just borders on being way too dangerous, Stephen. But it stayed clear of that. What I think is interesting about the Alpha 1 is that, you know, it reflects its time so well.
Oh, dear.
I mean, what's happening in 1958 and then in the early 60s?
Mm-hmm.
1957, of course, Sputnik was launched. And the U.S. is getting increasingly concerned about its children and its children's abilities to do science well, right? Sound familiar? Sound like today with STEM teaching?
Right.
So we see this raft of science toys, and the Alpha 1 is one of them. The Alpha 1 I love because stamped on the very front of the box is designed by missile engineers, tested at Cape Canaveral. Now, you can't get any more.
This toy was tested at Cape Canaveral.
And you sort of have this image of the nation's astronauts hard at work testing this toy. But it worked. It was a bestseller. And it really is one of those sort of fusions of fun and learning that we see happening over and over again and really reflecting what the concerns are of the nation at the time.
Was the Alpha 1 ballistic missile dangerous, potentially dangerous? Could it come down on my head?
Well, Certainly it could. Yep. And especially because what would happen, you could launch it so high that, of course, by the time it came back down, it was accelerating, as our young scientists know, because they've been paying attention.
Of course.
You bet. It could be a nasty bruise if you didn't get out of the way.
Oh, my. I'd never heard of this one from the 50s. We'll move into the 60s in just a bit, but in the 50s, poor, pitiful Pearl.
Yeah,
that's a nice alliteration for you, but it sounds so sad. Can you help us with poor, pitiful Pearl?
That's one of those toys that I have to say I don't think either one of us had heard of. This came about.
Adam's got a strange smirk on his face here.
it was a mystery to me.
What happened? We launched a pretty successful online campaign to ask people to submit stories about their favorite toys, and one that came in was this delightful story from a woman talking about how this was the best friend for me because I was a scabby kneed little girl who didn't want to wear high heels. Poor pitiful Pearl. The idea behind this doll is that she comes with two outfits. She comes dressed as a little urchin who you then can clean up and dress up into her party dress. So she's a wonderful story. Actually, here's a little piece of trivia for you. Created by William Steig, who went on to also create Shrek.
That is good trivia. My. So poor pitiful Pearl. Was she popular?
She was popular. Wow. She was made by several different companies.
Well, yeah. Adam and I never heard of her, but we have now, Adam, huh? Poor pitiful Pearl has come into all of our lives thanks to this exhibit. Well, let's move into the 1960s next year. Trolls. Oh, those big-eyed trolls. What about those that freaky hairdo and all the rest? Big deal, though, with kids.
I'll let Kate take that one.
All right.
I was not a troll person.
Nor was I.
Okay, I'll admit it. I don't know what that says about me. I was a troll person.
It's all good.
Yeah, okay. All good. It's all good. So trolls actually originated, not surprisingly, the legend of the troll is largely in Scandinavian folklore and goes back centuries.
Right.
But Thomas Dam, a Danish man, actually brought it into prominence and started a small factory, and they went gangbusters. And this is one of those toys that is a fad toy. Once they get going, they just don't stop. So if you know what we're talking about, they're those little ugly, cute plastic dolls.
Ugly, cute. That's an interesting construction.
Yeah. Yep. With the crazy hair, the crazy colored hair, and I would bet listeners right now are saying, I have one of those somewhere.
Right.
Because many of us still have those squirreled away somewhere.
I opened the closet and scared the heck out of me the other day, right?
Okay. Yes. So you bought the trolls. They came with their own clothes, or you could make your own. There were troll patterns out there. I remember my older sister spending many happy hours making felt clothes for our trolls. And then, you know, then they disappeared as quickly as they came in terms of a fad. But at the peak of their power, they weren't just for kids. Adults were giving them to each other. There were trolls given as wedding gifts. They hung from rearview mirrors. I'm absolutely serious. They hung from rearview mirrors in cars. They populated dorm rooms. And listeners will remember this. One of the great fads. So in the exhibit, you'll see our little troll shelf with about a dozen trolls represented. And boy, are they fun. They're one of my favorites.
I can, Marge, I don't think this marriage is going to last. Let's give them a troll, not
a
toaster.
What do you say?
We're having a blast here talking about a forthcoming exhibit. It's almost here at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul. Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Opening 2 weeks from today. You'll want to see it. There's a companion book authored by our two guests today, Kate Roberts and Adam Scher. You'll want to pick up on that. Look through it. It is wonderful. Good gift idea, too. Fantastic stuff. And by the way, you two were so nice to bring along some extra copies of the books today. And some exhibit tickets. Thank you. We're going to give those away to listeners on our Monday through Friday All Request and Dedication program here on KLBB. We do that show noon to 2, Monday through Friday. And I'll tell you what, we'll get some of our listeners on the line then, next week. And Kate and Adam, maybe you can hop on the line with us too and reminisce a little bit as we give away tickets to the lucky winners, tickets to the exhibit, and your book too.
We would love that.
Great deal.
We'll come
Thank
back
you.
Anytime.
Wonderful. You're welcome anytime. Let's take a break, Kyle. We'll be right back with Adam and Kate and the toys of your life.
At
At Hymie's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Hymie's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Hymie's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Hymies.com.
At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
At Woodbury Dental Arts, they don't just treat teeth, they treat you. As a patient of Woodbury Dental Arts, you will receive the highest standard of dental care. You'll also receive complimentary Wi-Fi service and Netflix-connected TVs with headphones in each treatment room. A comfortable, pain-free experience and a very relaxing atmosphere, all in one convenient location. At Woodbury Dental Arts, where they don't just treat teeth, they treat you. Call 651-436-7559 or visit WoodburyDentalArts.com.
I'm Sam Leon of Acapulco Restaurante Mexicano. When your family has 9 kids, you get used to a little chaos. Lucky for us, Mama Maria was always there to dry a tear or join the fun. On Mother's Day, all 8 Acapulco restaurants will be featuring Mother's Day specials, and our Stillwater location will have a fabulous brunch in honor of Mama. Enjoy the authentic Mexican flavors that Mama Maria is still handing down to us today. Happy Mother's Day.
Mother's Day is Sunday, May 11th, online at AcapulcoMN.com. We jump right back in here. We're talking toys. We're in Toyland today. Thanks to our good friends at the Minnesota History Center. They have a wonderful new exhibit. It is a not-to-be-missed exhibit opening 2 weeks from today. I like the title. It's very simple. To the point, says it all. Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And Kate Roberts and Adam Scherer are our guests. They are very important people at the History Center. They have had a major hand in putting this exhibit together, putting together a companion book. Yahoo! A big shout-out to the both of you. Thank you very much. Well, we're in the 60s right now, not lost in the 60s, to talking toys of the 60s, talked about trolls. All right, I'm not going to give his name, but I have a very, very good friend who was, shall I say, traumatized when he took a 1960s vintage toy to school for show and tell. Mousetrap is the name of that thing, and in a sense, he was trapped because he tried his very best to there he is at the front of his class, all of his classmates there watching him. And he shows them how you build this thing and how it works and how it traps the mouse. But everything that could go wrong went wrong. And suddenly my poor friend, just a young man then, just a kid, is almost reduced to tears, I think. The kids are laughing at him, his fellow students. What's worse, Kate and Adam, teachers from down the hall hear this laughter, these gales of laughter, and they come to the door to see what's going on. And this friend of mine, it just gets worse because the more he tries to do right, he fumbles and messes up, and he just can't get Mousetrap to work. And the teachers are laughing at him, too. I think he's still traumatized.
Well, you know, I don't blame him, and I'm sorry that he did that in public, because so many of us in private at home had those same troubles with this game. This is, I love Mousetrap. I mean, I loved it as a kid, and it's fun today, but what was funny about it is that there's this range of toys where ultimately, it didn't become about winning or losing. It just became about making the darn thing work. And Mousetrap falls in that category. It was the brainchild of Marvin Glass. And if you know his name, you might know it because he also created Mr. Machine, Operation, Light Bright. He was the brains behind a lot of toys. But this one was modeled on a Rube Goldberg cartoon. And if listeners remember those cartoons, the inventions that really had no purpose.
They were overcomplicated to perform a very simple task.
Exactly. And that is this toy in a nutshell. So it was a great toy, and I feel for your friend because
I think he's still scarred.
I think he is, and it's funny, too, because over Thanksgiving holiday, my siblings and I got together, and we played our childhood game. And again, we were all frustrated trying to get the thing going. And who figured it out? My brother, the engineer, who incidentally did play with Erector sets.
Ah!
sat down and figured out how to put the toy together. Okay. So even today.
Let's segue, Adam, to the name of this game. I love it. Rat Fink. What's that all about from the 60s, Adam?
Well, Rat Fink, I think, is probably one of the quintessential 60s toys, probably not as popular as some of the others, but, you know, the 60s is a time of great change, the emergence of the counterculture, and I think that Rat Fink is a great example of that. He's the brainchild of Ed Big Daddy Roth.
Big
Daddy. He was a cartoonist and a car designer in California, and he's working in the late 50s, early 60s, at the time when what's called custom culture, and that's with a K and a K, beginning and ending, was taking root in California, the idea that being that we're going to break the mold. We're going to do things differently. We're going to be nonconformists, and that's going to translate into design. And it started primarily with automobiles, and the idea of hot rods, and worked its way in all sorts of different types of design. And so he created this cartoon character called Rat Fink, which was the counterculture's answer to Mickey Mouse, who is, you know, squeaky clean. And so this, if you can imagine a rat, you know, with bloodshot eyes and big teeth and lots of hair and just, you know, not the kind of mouse you want to bring home to mom.
The anti-rodent.
Yeah. And so Revell, the plastic model company, which had established itself in the 1940s, thought this would make an interesting model. And they came out with a Rat Fink model in 1963. And there was a short-lived line of Rat Fink models that included some of the custom cars that Ed Roth was creating that you could also make along with the figures. And this was just, you know, absolutely fit the bill for young boys in their teenage years who were being rebellious, who loved to gross out their siblings, who liked to do things that they knew that their parents would hate. And so Rat Fink was their friend. He was certainly mine.
You were a Rat Fink aficionado.
Yes, I was. And you know, he was very short-lived. Revell went on to bigger and better things, but he really has cemented himself as a character and a caricature of the 1960s.
We can see Rat Fink at the exhibit. We can. Rat Fink will be staring you with his bloodshot eyes and his gnarly, sharp teeth right there. Rat Fink lives on, Adam, doesn't he? Huh? He does.
He does.
He does. Thanks to Big Daddy. Toys of the 1960s. Oh, let's see. Frisbee, of course, we all love that thing. That's fun. In the book, you tell how that evolved from, I think, a pie plate or something. That's great. Tonka Toys, that's local bragging rights, isn't it? Great, great toys. Let's talk about something called from the 60s, Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Kate and Adam, I think you know a little something about that, don't you? Hmm?
Well, I think this was another boy toy, very much so. Although, if you look at the television commercials from the early 1960s, I think boys and girls are playing this both, which is rather interesting. This was a way for young kids to get out some of their aggression. Basically, you had a couple of plastic robots in a ring and joysticks that you could operate their arms so that they could employ fisticuffs, and the object of the game was to knock the block off of your opponent.
And, how tender.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a great way to get out your frustrations, and was a very popular toy for, again, a brief period of time.
Mm-hmm. All right. We don't want to belabor it, but obviously Barbie was a huge, huge deal. Yes, Kate, why don't you talk about Barbie, her
and
evolution?
You know, we certainly are going to have a lot of Barbie fans out there, and in the exhibit she is richly represented both in the 60s and then again in the 70s.
And on the cover of your book.
And on the cover of the book. Yep, as Stan has pointed out.
She's there.
She's there. So, you know, as everyone knows, she does debut in 1959. Her last name is Roberts, by the way.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes, but she's no relation.
No relation. Okay.
But she debuted in 1959. And what I think is interesting about Barbie, and we all know the story, and we all know the kind of flack she's taken over the years, but the intent behind her, Ruth Handler, who is the person who developed her and who first brought her to market, always intended for her, and she talked about this, I intended her to be a demonstration to girls that a woman has choices. But Barbie was a career woman from day one. And so what I think is interesting about this doll is that, again, she debuts at the end of the 50s. She becomes very popular through the 60s and 70s. And her advertising runs both ways. Sometimes she's portrayed as a very traditional woman. Other times she really is portrayed as a career woman, as a very forward-looking modern woman. But we got a story about her from one of our folks, and she said, you know what I loved about Barbie? Barbie had her own clothes. Barbie had her own income. She had a car. She represented what I wanted to be as a woman. And I thought, you know, that's a really interesting way to look at Barbie, and something that I think a lot of us forget.
Barbies are still around? Are they still being made?
You know they it, are. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
See, I wouldn't know that because, you know, I'm a guy. Right? Okay. G.I. Joe from the 60s, of course. Twister, Spirograph. If we can briefly... Boy, our time is running out here. We got to get to a quiz with Kyle.
Oh, we do. We
he
do.
He aced our last toy quiz.
Uh-oh. Okay. Pressure's on,
Spirograph.
Kyle. Spirograph, just really briefly. Yeah. We all remember that. That's the toy with the spinning, interlocking wheels. And if you weren't an artsy kid, and I wasn't, not Stan, you were saying you
not
weren't
at all.
Either.
Not
but
at
we
did.
Could both succeed with Spirograph, huh?
Really?
You could
I think
make,
so. It looks
yes.
to me.
Yep, you could
I want
make beautiful
one.
Designs.
I want one.
Okay, we'll get you one, Stan.
Thank you. So you can make all kinds of neat stuff. Even
oh,
I can't,
absolutely.
I can't draw a stick man.
Absolutely.
I
can. You can, if okay. you if you can hold a pen,
okay.
you can use Spirograph.
I think I can do that.
All right.
And G.I. Joe, of course, one of your favorites and your brothers, too, from the sea. Let's go to the 70s right now. Well, let's talk about... Let's talk about maybe one of the most dangerous toys that was ever marketed, Jarts, okay? Who wants to take a toss at Jarts here?
Well, Jarts is really a game of lawn darts. So its antecedents go way, way back. The object of the game is simple enough. You get a circle that was in the form of basically a plastic disc that you set out on your lawn, and the object is to... plunk these lawn darts into the circle and you get a point, and the person who gets the most in there gets the most points and wins. The problem, of course, is these are projectiles with very sharp ends because they're supposed to go into turf. They were not really intentionally marketed as a kid's game. They were really steered more towards an adult audience, but you know, once a family got it, all bets were off. I mean, you know, if a kid wanted to play it, you know, most of the time the parents said, go ahead and play with it. But we, in the course of doing the research for the book and the exhibit, found multiple stories of people who were either admonished by their parents for playing it or had war wounds from playing it or who have fond memories of their parents saying, stand back. So it was a legitimately dangerous game and, in fact, was ultimately banned by the Consumer Protection Agency because it was just too dangerous.
In your book, your companion book to the exhibit, you have a close-up of the box in which Jarts came. Warning, not a toy for use by children. May cause serious or fatal injury. How about that? That's not too subtle, is it, huh?
That is not subtle at all.
So they were pulled off the market.
Yeah, the original game actually didn't have that warning.
Oh, man.
And then later on, of course, they added it.
Nerf ball, 70s toy. Nerf ball, that's the ball that couldn't break stuff, right? You could throw it around the house and not break anything, but you did, of course, right?
Or the advertising box art of the period said also that you couldn't hurt babies or old people.
Couldn't hurt babies or old people.
Somehow I don't think that type of advertising would fly today.
Nerf balls, they'll live forever. Won't they in our memory? Look out. Old people, don't worry. Babies, you're okay. Nerf balls can't hurt you. What else do we want to talk about here? Let's see. $6 million man and bionic woman action figures of the 1970s. That was a big deal.
Well, you know, action figures get huge after G.I. Joe, and they just become more and more prominent. And then, you know, what's better than action figures merged with a very popular TV show?
Sure.
And people talk about that $6 million man in particular with that bionic eye. Yeah. And if you remember, you know what I'm talking about.
TV was the big driver, wasn't it?
TV was, yeah, for advertising. And then in the 70s, increasingly, toys really connected to TV shows.
And in the 70s, this crazy thing called Pet Rock. I mean, who'd have thunk it? Just a rock.
It took an advertising executive to come up with
it. I guess who had a 3-martini lunch, maybe. I don't know.
Well, actually, you're not far off.
Really?
He was, Gary Dahl was actually having drinks with friends at a bar in California, and they were all complaining about all the maintenance that was involved in keeping their pets in order. And, you know, he said, well, Pet Rock doesn't need any type of maintenance. And he went home and he started the concept. Started writing out a manual for it, a training manual, care and feeding, teaching it tricks. And he got hooked up with...
Kyle.
So,
you believe this is true, Kyle? It is.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a stretch.
Well, and it was sold in a little box with breathing holes, too.
So the rock had plenty of air.
Plenty of air.
And Excelsior.
And nestled in Excelsior,
yeah,
right?
Oh, they thought of everything for these rocks. Adam, somebody made a lot of money off rocks they scooped off the beach.
Huh? He did. He made a fortune. And it was relatively short-lived. It was only, it really was a fad toy that was around for about a year. But it was surprisingly popular.
Oh, wow. So many more we could talk about. Simon from the 70s, Little Professor in Speak and Spell, Holly Hobby, Sesame Street, Woodblock, all kinds of wonderful things. You'll see these all at the exhibit. It's quiz time. The smart guy across the glass there, he aced our quiz when you were here a few weeks back. He got every one right. I don't know how you do it. You weren't even around when these toys, but you know. Let's throw a couple of it at here, okay? Since her introduction in 1959, Kyle, this iconic fashion doll, along with her sister Skipper and friends Midge and PJ, has enjoyed a highly accessorized lifestyle. Who is she? Tammy, Barbie, Beautiful Chrissy, Poor Pitiful Pearl.
Ooh.
Since her introduction in 59, iconic fashion doll, along with her sister Skipper and friends Midge, Ken, and PJ, has enjoyed a highly accessorized lifestyle.
Well, since you added Ken in there, I'm going to say Barbie.
You got it. I gave it away to you. That's correct. Yep. Let's see. What walks down... Oh, this is a giveaway for you. What walks downstairs alone or in pairs? Everyone knows it's... Yeah. What do we have? Robot Commando, Inchworm, Slinky, or Weebles?
Oof.
Walks downstairs... I think we had this one on the quiz last time around.
Yeah, would that be the Slinky?
You got it.
Yeah,
that's
that was
right.
On last time.
Kyle, so far, batting 1,000 again. a runaway fad was launched in 1975 when advertising executive Gary Dahl, tired of listening to his friends, I think, did we do this? Yeah, we already did this one. This is Pet Rock. Okay, we'll pass that. This toy, one of the first to be advertised on television, was modified from its original version to address government safety regulations and complaints from parents about rotting vegetables. Was this Incredible Edibles, Fisher-Price Corn Popper, Mr. Potato Head, or Pretty Maid Toy Refrigerator?
Oh, man, I have no idea.
This toy, one of the first to be advertised on TV, modified from its original version to address government safety regulations and complaints from parents about rotting vegetables.
Let's say Mr. Potato Head.
Mr. Potato Head. This guy. Adam, Kate, what do you think of this guy?
Wow, he's a natural.
I did
you
not
are a natural.
Show these to him before the show. One more here, maybe? Do we have time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Ooh, this is going to be hard.
Okay, well, maybe we'll trip you
all
up
right
here.
Yep.
In the late 1950s, Kyle, Remco produced ads for its Coney Island penny machine and Movie Land drive-in theater featuring this young actress who would go on to a stellar career in movies and television. Mariette Hartley, Natalie Wood, Karen Valentine, Patty Duke. I think we may have you here.
Yeah, I don't know this
In the late 50s, okay. The answer is?
The answer is Patty Duke.
Yep. 16-year-old Patty Duke won the Best Supporting Actress Oscar for her portrayal of the young Helen Keller in The Miracle Worker. Later that year, she was given her own television series, cleverly named The Patty Duke Show. So there we are. I guess we're down to a minute, so once again, our thanks, our shout-out to Kate Roberts and Adam Scher from the Minnesota History Center. Thank you very much for coming down and kind of walking us through this wonderful toys exhibit, opening once again. Tell us where and when.
Opening May 24th at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul, 10 to 5 Saturday, noon to 5 Sunday, 10 to 5 Monday.
And folks, you really can play with these toys.
You bet.
Too, right?
You bet.
It's not just looking at them through glass. You can get in there and walk Slinky down those stairs. Mm-hmm. I'm going right for Ratfink, Adam. What do you think of that, huh?
Good choice.
All right. Folks, thank you so much for your company. I hope you've had as much fun as we have. I suspect you have. This is a great great trip through yesteryear and a fun one at that, kind of in the fun house. So thank you, Stan Turner, here. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you on Monday next about noon. Bye-bye.